Welcome back to another episode of the Strength and Speed Podcast. I'm your host, Mudgear Hannibal Race Pro and Strength and Speed owner Evan Preparis. I got a guest with me on the line. Before we get to her, though, a quick word from this episode's sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Yolked. If you're looking for a great nutritional product to pair with your protein, you should try Yolked. If you've been to Savage Race this year, you've probably tried some of their samples. Great product, great tasting. Clinical trials show 3 times the muscle growth. So don't expect to like blow up huge, but it is going to help with recovery. It is going to help build a little bit more muscle, which will allow you to perform better in the future. So highly recommend it. It tastes really good. You can sprinkle it on your yogurt, sprinkle it on your food, sprinkle it into your protein shake, whatever you want, or you can just drink it straight out of the bag. Little packets they come in that are super convenient to come and take with you to races. You can use code STRENGTH20 to save you 20% off every order. That's STRENGTH20, and you can order it off yolked.com, www.yolked.com. All right, let's get to today's guests. Joining me, I have Lynn Hall, the CEO, race director, owner of Boulder Dash. So Lynn, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Super excited to have you. I have done a lot of local OCRs, but I have not made it out to Boulder Dash because it's an East Coast event and I am located in the Midwest. So I'm excited to dig into this. We're going to be talking about Boulder Dash, a little bit about the history, about how you've managed to stick around for so long. We're going to be talking about the New England OCR Expo coming up later this month and kind of dig into some of your background and some of the history of Boulder Dash. I'm excited.
Very good. Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So let's start off with Boulder Dash, right? Started in 2011. So I guess take us back to like, why did you start an OCR series? Let's go there.
That's a good question. So I was a trainer at the local YMCA, and we had been doing over the years, we had done all kinds of different challenges and different kinds of things within the four walls, as well as, you know, going out doing different runs, sprint triathlons, those kinds of things. And we were just bored. So a lot of the people that I had trained were just saying, I really want to do something different. So they started all investigating, trying to find things that everybody would agree to doing. And one of them found a Spartan race back when no one knew what Spartan was. This was in 2010 in Amesbury.
That's like the first one. I mean, we're talking like that is, yeah, that's early. Keep going.
Way back. Yeah, we had absolutely no clue what we were doing. And she just came to us and she's like, yeah, you crawl under barbed wire and you go through mud and you jump on fire. And all of us were like, what? But we had decided as a group that we would do something crazy. And that sounded crazy enough. And this is, you know, again, back, like you said, it's the beginning. I mean, they basically had a tarp on the ground and we were crawling underneath it. Do you know what I mean? Like it was way in the beginning.
Yeah. If anyone hasn't seen like 2010 Spartan races, go on YouTube. They look like straight trash. It is wild. It like, I remember Hobie Call posting a video of him doing an early Spartan race and like the things aren't even marked well. There's like people giving him directions and he's literally, like you said, he's literally crawling under a tarp. Like that's an obstacle. Yeah. And like, he's got a bucket and he's going into like a local lake and pulling. It's wild. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, so we did it, and it was back when they had the gladiators, which I'm glad that they had, that we got to experience that. But so we finished, and there was about 50 of us, and basically what we did all summer long was just we trained for something that we had no idea what it was. So made up crazy things in my backyard. I had them using the swing sets, and we had the sprinklers on them, and then I'd make them run around the neighborhood and come back and they'd do something else, and we got barrels and they crawled through them, and we just had a great time trying to figure out, okay, we have no idea what this is, but we figure this should cover it. And it did. We were good. We went up and completed it, and then on the way back everybody was still, you know, just high as a kite from doing it. You know, we all felt great. And as we were driving back, and I know you said you're from the West Coast, so you probably don't know this about Rhode Islanders, but we don't like to go very far.
So I grew up on Long Island. So I'm originally East Coast and now I'm Midwest. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if it's more than 20 minutes, it's a day trip as far as we're concerned. So on the way back, we all talked about what a great time we had, but that none of us wanted to go back to Amesbury to have to do that again, that we needed one a lot closer. And I like to say that Boulder Dash was born in the backseat of my car because someone from the backseat yelled, hey, Lynn, make one.
Nice.
And that's kind of what happened.
Nice. Yeah, I love in the Midwest we have another race director, William Schell from Mythic Race, who fan of OCR and was like, we need more of them in the middle of Missouri. And he's like, well, if no one's gonna do it, I'm gonna do it. And you know, he started his own brand about 2 years ago. So they're about to do their third event this year.
Yeah, wow, great
All
for
right.
them.
Yeah. So you decide to do the race, start setting things up. Talk me through some like unexpected challenges. You know, like I think as an OCR athlete, a lot of people are like, oh, it's super easy. It's, you know, it's no problem. You throw out some flags and you build some obstacles and you're done. And it's not a problem.
Yeah.
And everyone shows up because there's a race in the area. So like talk me through some of the challenges as like a new race director you faced.
Absolutely. I'd never done anything like this, nor did I ever think I would. So I basically went down to, there's one ski area, and it's actually a valley, not a mountain. It's called Yago Valley Ski Area in Rhode Island. So I went down to them and had never met them before or anything like that, but just asked them, you know, you ready, want to take a chance with me? You know, this is something that is up and coming. I think it'd be cool. And it was perfect. They have a search and rescue team, you know, on site. So we hired them and just, you know, started to get a couple of sponsors going on so that we could get a little bit of money coming in so that we could start to build. And again, we did not know what we were doing. So as we were building, I was also doing boot camps. I was running boot camps on Sundays and sort of along the lines of, you know, what we had done before Spartan. And one day at a boot camp, I said, hey, does anybody know how to hang a cargo net in between two trees? Because I had no clue. And one of the participants in the boot camp was like, yeah, I can help you with that. Okay. And he came, and his name is Grant, and he is still my builder today. So we met on, you know, on the, I want to say on the course, but on the boot camp course. And he came, he started putting things up. Our first walls were made out of picnic table wood because he used to make picnic tables. So he donated the wood. They were so heavy. I can't even tell you to put up a 10-foot wall made out of picnic table wood. And probably the biggest, so other than trying to figure out how to build these things and get them on this, you know, mountainous region. The biggest challenge that we had was that we had to run in the road for a part of it because I did not know how to, you know, we just kind of went up and down, and there was no, like you were saying, no marking, no anything like that. We just went up the hill and then we came back down the other part, and then we went back up the other part, and it wasn't quite a 5K. So we decided to run on the road, and we created what we call the boulder dash, which is basically you running with a rock. So you ran with the rock and you were supposed to put the rock down at a bridge, which was about maybe a half a mile out on the road. And then when you run back, you go out on the course, next person runs out, they pick up that rock and conveniently bring it back to the start. It was going to go like that all day.
Oh,
And, you know,
interesting.
great ideas don't always work out. We had a policeman who his job was to stay at the bridge and make sure that everybody, number one, got there safely, number two, put their rock down, and number three, got to where they were going. And I think we had some tires on the other side of the road so that you had something to do on the way back. And the policeman took it upon himself to escort the first wave out versus being at the bridge like we had asked him to do. And then he went to the other end of that road to turn his police car around. And as he was turning his police car around, he noticed that everyone followed him.
Jeez.
So he just kept running. So I would say about maybe 12 or 15 people had actually followed him. Could have been a little bit more than that. And then luckily, someone who helped with the race was also in that first wave. And when she got to where you were supposed to stop, she started stopping everyone. So not everyone went, but of course, we all know that your first people are your fastest.
Yeah.
So these are people who were really competing, wanted to finish first, and ended up doing an extra half mile to a mile on the road. So yeah, we learned. We didn't go back on the road again the next year. And I learned how to, I mean, even just, you know, it's the communication, you know, just because you think you communicated something, if you don't really play these things out, you didn't always communicate exactly what you thought you were going to, you know, have happen. So that was probably our biggest challenge. The two biggest challenges, we didn't know what the heck we were doing. because the whole industry was so new.
Yeah.
And number two, we had to learn how to really express our needs to people who are volunteering their time.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, especially even being around the industry, there are certain things that, you know, I just assume are like, oh, everyone knows this. This is common sense. This is basic race etiquette. This is basic, you know, like rules of obstacle course racing. And sometimes if you have volunteers, that's not necessarily true. It might just be someone who's being helpful and volunteering their time during that time block. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Good points there. So you started the race. Go for it.
Oh, I was going to say, we, you know, like I said, with Spartan, just had a, you know, a tarp. We had very similar, very simple obstacles. And our finish line was, you were supposed to crawl through the sand. So we had built this the night before. We were trying to get this thing set, and we were just putting these boards in the ground, you know, that sort of made fencing. And then we were putting chicken wire over the top of it. And that's what you were going to crawl under. And we did that on a volleyball court because we figured this will be great. We can really dig these things down and, you know, it'll keep together. That was not the case. First of all, halfway through building them, we ran out of time. It got dark. We had put some of these car lights on us so that we could do it. Their battery went dead. I mean, you name it, it went wrong. This is the night before. And then as the day rolled on, we found out that the volleyball court actually had cement under it. So it was just a little bit of dirt. And as people are crawling through it, the fencing is rolling up on the top. The lanes that we had made with the wood were starting to pull out of the ground. I mean, there was nothing dangerous, but it was a bad idea. So by the end of the day, people were crawling, just get down. And we just had a couple of people from the Air Force were just yelling at them and to keep them crawling so that they couldn't get up.
Nice. So that was 2011. Now let's jump forward in time to modern day. What does your race look like now? What weekend is it typically? And yeah, let's go there.
Well, for the last 6 years, we have had what we call Winter Dash. And that's usually in March. This is the first year we're not having it. Mm-hmm. We have continuously reinvented ourselves. And that's probably why we're still around. Mm-hmm. We started with the mud run. We started on the mount, you know, with the hills and all of those things. We moved into sort of a more inviting type style race. We did a beach race. We did, like I said, the Winter Dash. We've done kids runs. And so now we sort of dabble in just about everything, and we're just kind of seeing what works. So long way around to say, we don't really have that standard, this is when our race is, now that we've moved away from Winter Dash. So we do have a race coming up this weekend, actually. That's called Amazing Wish Race, and it's kind of a mix between obstacle course and team building. And it raises money for a local nonprofit that helps kids with different diseases. Most are unfortunately fatal. And so we started kind of getting into that, where we could help the community by running events. And we're, for the first time this year, we're going back to the fall for the main event. So we're going to have Boulder Dash in September, which is when we used to have it.
Nice.
And then in so it feels really good to get back to the fall. And then in October, we have Doggy Dash.
Nice.
And it's what you said. It is an obstacle course for the dogs.
Do humans run it alongside? I mean, I'm assuming are the humans doing the obstacles? Let me ask that. Or it's just the
humans
dogs?
Humans are not doing the obstacles. This is an obstacle course for your dog.
Okay. Do you crown first, second, and third? Or is it more of a participation?
No, I'm just too busy running around petting dogs all day.
Okay.
It's really more of what you see is just a bunch of really happy pet owners, just thrilled to be out doing, and in many cases, what they love to do, and focusing on their pet.
Awesome. You know, what's so funny is we're actually recording this on April Fool's Day. And for years, every year, Tough Mudder or Spartan was like, welcome, you know, the dog Tough Mudder. Like, they were joking about it for years. And here you are doing it every year.
Yeah.
So
it's the best event of the year. It really is. I think we're going on year 6 or 7.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Spell Boulder Dash for the people, just so people can find you on social media. Easy.
So it's B-O-L-D, like the word bold, and then it's just the letter R, and then we spell out dash, E-A-S-H. So it's bold R dash.
Gotcha. Okay. So you kind of started answering it already, but we mentioned, you know, you've been around since 2011, and you've managed to continue to reinvent yourself. So, you know, as we've, especially in the last, I mean, I feel like I say this every year, but there's always like brands rising and falling every year. And every year, yeah. I'm like, no, I can't believe Battle Frog went out of business. I can't believe Warrior Dash went out of business. I can't believe, and this year it's Rugged Maniac, and it looks like Bone Frog. They're kind of up in the air exactly what's going on with them for the second time in about 3 years. Why do you think other brands are having trouble sustaining, and why are you sticking around? Is it just the continued reinvention? Is it the, you know, are you better at managing cost versus, you know, like I feel like some brands, especially like the big brands like Tough Mudder and Spartan, they put so much production cost into their events, it becomes almost hard for them to make a profit because they have these huge staffs. So like, talk me through some of the, you know, what you think is some of the issues with some of the other brands, or is it just the ebb and flow of the industry? Yeah, I'll turn it over to you.
There's definitely an incredible ebb and flow with the industry. And, you know, we have to look back at 2020, you know, that really hurt a lot of people in this space. But we can't blame 2020 because the running industry has come back. Mm. It's the OCR industry that's not as strong as it was before. And, you know, a lot of people will say that it's because people in the race industry concentrated too much on the elite, and you lost that average person who wanted to go out and try something. I'm not sure that's 100% true, but I can't see that point. For us, we did both of what you just said. We have that reinvention, and we've found a way to sort of control cost as much as we possibly can. Our reinvention is literally going, like I said, so we don't have a mud race anymore, which does totally bum me out. But we did start a kids and family mud race, which was helping a different nonprofit organization called Thrive Outside. So that was Thrive Outside in the Mud. So we were able to kind of keep the mud going through that for, I think, six seems to be the magic number, 6 years. And then we continued to reinvent ourselves. I mean, the way that it went for us is there was a hurricane in, I think, 2013 that really devastated our beaches. And we were approached by one of the more vacation spots on the Musquamicket Beach is what it's called. And they got pummeled. So we did, it was like a Save the Beach race. And it was a 2-day on the beach, in the sand, running along rocks and in and out of the water and that kind of thing. So we ran that one. That turned into a beach race that I think we held the beach race 3 or 4 times. Then there was a place called Rocky Point. It's an old amusement park that they finally tore down and just made it an open state park. So we celebrated that by setting up the obstacles sort of where the different rides used to be. So we would try and find an obstacle that was as close to what that ride was and put that there, which was really fun.
It
was very cool. There was we made even like arcade games and stuff like that that were a little, you know, more beefy to make it seem like obstacle racing, and we put that along where they used to have all of the, you know, arcade area and that kind of thing. So that was fun. We did that a couple of times. And then like I said, Doggy Dash came about. Sad little story there. Doggy Dash came about so that I could have my dog run it. And it ran in October that very first year. It's always been in October. And that May, she went blind.
Oh, no.
So she was never actually able to do it, which was very sad. But she would always visit. That was Elsie the Boulder Dog. She's the logo. She's still the logo. And she would, like I said, she would come down and visit, but she couldn't do it. So those are the different kinds of things that we've done. We've done that amazing wish race that I'm talking about this weekend. That's that pure mix of that team building piece. Some of it's a little bit silly. Some of it's a little bit brainy, you know, so basically everyone on your team has that place that they can help the team out.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really reinvented ourselves many, many, many times, but tried to stick with at least that one yearly obstacle course that was a little bit more along the lines of what Boulder Dash, you know, how we started and who we are. So that's kind of, you know, the craziness of where we've gone with everything. The cost piece is something that we were also very lucky with. And that is when we did our very first Winter Dash, it was on a campground. So it was a kids camp. They're not open in the winter, so it was perfect. We went in there and we literally made the trails. So our volunteers went through and we cut a 5K out of the woods and did Winter Dash. When COVID hit, the Sunday, I think they closed the world on Monday. That Sunday we were doing boot camps because they would allow us, as time grew on and we developed a relationship with this camp, they allowed us to build earlier and let people go out. And we started doing boot camps on Sundays and you could actually go out on the course and practice the course, which was really great. And we did our Sunday boot camp. Okay, everybody, we're ready. Next Sunday, it's race day. And Monday, the world shut down.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what we were very lucky with is that they allowed us to keep the obstacles up while things were slowly opening up, closing back down. We were trying to figure all of these things out. They allowed us at the camp to work with the state on how can we be outside safely and run this crazy event. And of course the state didn't know what they were doing either, because they didn't know how to say yes to you're going to crawl in what.
Right.
So we just kind of all made it up as we were going along. And I mean, we were wearing masks outside. We had these little garden stakes stuck in the ground with little handheld sanitizer for your hands.
Yeah,
you name it, we did it. We sprayed down the obstacles with sanitizing spray in every half an hour. I mean, we did whatever we were told, but it allowed us to keep moving all year long.
Yeah.
So we kept doing boot camps, and then we held in the middle of the summer when things started to open up a little tiny bit more, we held the race over and over again, just to let everyone get their chance who had registered in March. So we ran two in July, I think another one in August, and we just kind of kept opening it up and kept letting everybody get out there. And that eventually turned into, we never took the obstacles down and just started adding. So we've worked with the camp in different ways, both financially and physically. We maintain the trails. We have marked all the trails so that when they have someone come, because they also do conferences, they can follow our markings now so that the conference can go out for a walk and that kind of thing. So we've developed a partnership together. And that is probably the biggest reason, if not the only reason, that we're still around. We were able to find that way of not packing up 350-foot trailers, because that's what we used to do. Mm. And instead, everything's out there. Downside, we don't move around anymore. And
right.
And it is a big one. It is a big one. It's as much of a good thing as it is a not so good thing. But so far it's working. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Yeah. So there are brands in the Midwest that have been around for a while, and some of them do something very similar. So mm-hmm. Casey Timber Challenge is primarily a zip line, high adventure course, but they have an obstacle course on their property. And they've managed to, I mean, I think they started 2013 or something like that. So, and back in 2013, the obstacles were trash. They were not good. And now the obstacles are like, cause they'll upgrade one thing, you know, every event. Right. But you add that times 30 events and now like the whole course is good. So it was, And they've been around for a while. Like I said, they've been doing good. And there's another zip line place locally where I live in Manhattan, Kansas, that also has an obstacle course race. So I don't know. Maybe that's the future of OCR for the smaller brands, is you partner with a local Boy Scout camp or a camp or a zipline facility or some sort of other place that can generate money on the side and then keep your obstacles up year round. Who knows?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a plus and a minus. You know, I mean, I definitely think that it's great that we can have, and we have multiple events there. Amazing Wish Race is going to be there because we use the fields and other things in order to do all the team building stuff. And then we also, you know, we have Doggy Dash there because, you know, we just use the same trails, but we put out a little bit of different obstacles. The Doggy Dash obstacles we actually pack away. But on that other side of it, there is that negative of, well, I've already done that one and I've already done there. So, you know, this year I'm going to go try someplace else. But I think the balance is I'm not a large brand. I have a full-time job. This is not something that I'm doing to make $1 million. I obviously need to pay the bills.
Right.
But that ability where we're not a big company that needs to pay multiple staff and do all of those things. We have 1099 people who come and go. Again, they all have full-time jobs. And we have a lot of volunteers who I am exceptionally lucky to have around me because most of them have been with us for close to 10 years. And that, I think, is incredible. And that kind of speaks to the family of OCR, I think. You just get really, really close when you're, you know, sticking your hands on someone's butt and pushing them over a 10-foot wall. You get to know them a little.
Nice, nice. Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm excited. I actually moved to Boston in August, so maybe you might see me in September. Well,
oh, I think you just walked right into that one. We're definitely going to see you in Boston. You're moving to Boston. There's no excuse.
Yeah, yeah.
Your bib is already set aside. How's that?
All right, sounds good. So, okay, I guess you will see me in September. Okay. All right, let's move on talking about the New England OCR Expo. So I believe this we're starting, we're about to hit the third year of the New England OCR Expo. Talk to people about what it is, first of all, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. So it was actually right after a boot camp, I believe, that Steve came up to me as he was leaving. So Steve has been a fantastic volunteer for Boulder Dash for a couple of years as well before the OCR Expo started. And he just kind of said, you know what? I just want to do something. I want to get people together off the course, you know, so that we can all just kind of hang out and get to know each other. And I want it to be a big party. And I think it could be really fun. And I was like, hey, Steve, whatever you need, just let me know. And let's see what we can do. So he just started reaching out to different people. And it ended up where it was this sort of really great mix that first year of lots of vendor tables and things to people to visit and things to do. Each table sort of had that permission to use some space, maybe come up with some kind of a challenge or just give away prizes, spinning a wheel or whatever it might be. But then there was food and there was music and there were videos playing in the background on, you know, on film. And it really was exactly what he had thought of. It was a great way to highlight all of the great things that we have with OCR, whether it be a gym who trains for it, a race brand who you're going to run, or someone who creates the actual obstacles and different things, you know, everything was there. And then you had, you know, your other things around also like energy drinks and that kind of thing. But it all tied into that fitness OCR piece. And people just came out. They had an absolute blast. And there was no question that it had to be done bigger and better yet again. It was really cool to spend time to see people in real clothes was also interesting, you know.
It's always funny to be like you don't wear spandex all the time. That's weird.
Yeah, you have hair. You mean it's not in a ponytail always? You know. Yeah. So it was really cool to see people just come out, get to know each other on that sort of different level, and have a great time. So and then I think it was 2 weeks later. When that was 2020. So I believe we had to skip 2021, possibly even 2022, because we're coming up on the third one. So it took a little while to be able to come back from COVID. That was a tough one. Last year, it was at a bigger venue, like another golf course, but a bigger setting. And Steve had the great idea of starting to say, okay, like we had these little challenges last time. We got a bigger space. Let's make bigger challenges this time. And that's everybody came, and that's exactly what they did. They brought bigger and better things, actual equipment that people were working on, and different challenges that people can do. We brought something that, you know, was a new obstacle, but it was very small. So it was something that we could bring in. And everybody just had sort of highlighted what they did through play. And if you really think about it, that's what OCR is. You know, it's fitness through play.
It, 100%, and it's, yeah,
that's what we are. You know, that's what I believe OCR is. So it really did turn into, you know, an even bigger, better thing. And now this year, he has really gone and created something special. Now it's getting even more so into that fitness piece, where you're still going to have your 25 plus vendors stand, you know, being around, and they're going to have their standard little things that they're going to do, and the little challenges for you to do, and little prizes for you to win. And I think that that's fantastic. But on the outside of it, he's having it this time at a ninja gym. So he's able to take advantage of that space and what that gym offers. And he put together a DECA with Spartan and Yancey. And he put together even something that I don't think anyone's even really seen yet. And that is, with OCR coming to the Olympics with, I think it's a 100-meter course, he is able to mimic that the best way possible within the space. So it's 50 feet down, 50 meters down, 50, and 50 meters back. So now you've just got things that you haven't even been able to do before. So how can you not want to go there?
Nice. So I think you actually answered a lot of my next question, which is going to be like, if someone was taking this model, right? I always look at like models for success and basically mimicking them,
yeah,
in other sports or other places. I was going to ask, like, if someone wants to do, you know, a Midwest OCR Expo, a West Coast Expo, or a Texas Expo, or something like that, would be like, what recommendations or what tips would you have for someone looking to mimic this model in a different location?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that could be mimicked. I think that there's a lot of buy-in that needs to be had. You know, you really need to talk to people, and it's taking that chance. I mean, Steve took a big chance. You know, he loves OCR. He loves people. He loves fitness. He believes wholeheartedly he believes with his whole heart that getting people together and establishing those bonds on and off the course are just so, in many cases, life-changing, that he took that chance. He said, you know what, it's going to happen or it isn't going to happen. He took that chance physically, mentally, and financially. You know, he said, hopefully I don't lose my shirt. And he's not in it for the finances. Anything that the expo made the first few years, if it made anything beyond its bills, it went to charity, which actually the first year it was our charity, Find Your Bold, which worked alongside Boulder Dash. And the following year, I don't believe I remember exactly. I think he had a couple of charities going on the following year. And then he made the NEOCR Expo a foundation. So now it's an official nonprofit. So he's not in it for the money. And I think that shines through. If you're going to do an expo for the cash, that's great. It's going to probably look a little different than what he's doing, because he just wants to grow the family of OCR.
Yeah, no, absolutely great advice there. Love what you guys are doing. I think that's really clever. I think I think it should be mimicked in other places. And, you know, you mentioned those relationships being so important. And I know from my work in the obstacle course racing industry, and then like on my day job, I'm in the military. That's what I do day to day. And a lot of what I do is largely relationship based. So we have like a formal structure and organization. And even at work, someone's like, yeah, well, Evan, he does his own thing sometimes. I was like, but he gets stuff done, but he does his own thing. And a lot of it is just the relationships I'd built and the, you know, the way I treat people, interact with people and get stuff done for them, cutting around a lot of bureaucracy is how I've managed to do a lot of things, both within OCR and then on my professional side. So, yeah, huge, huge, great input there.
You have a lot in common with Steve.
Oh, yeah.
You really do. Yeah, he's ex-military as well.
What, Steve, what last name?
Steve, well, Steve Bacon.
Okay.
Steve is the one that started the NEOCR Expo.
All right, nice. So let's give everyone a details on location, time, date, et cetera, for the New England OCR Expo.
Okay, so the OCR Expo is going to be April 20th. It is at Ultimate Obstacles in West Boylston, Massachusetts. There, the doors open, I believe, at 10. There are the DECA and the 100 meter are starting, I want to say, at 11. I only built the registration website. Sorry. You'd think I would know this. You can do all three. You can, so essentially, you can come in and just hang out at the expo, watch people do great things, participate in whatever the vendors have going on. You can come in, you can do the 100 meter and check out the expo itself, or you could come in and do the DECA, check out the expo itself, or you can actually do all three. You can come in, you can do the DECA. When you register, you'll pick a time for your DECA, and then you'll get to register and get, pick another time for the 100 meter. So you could actually go in and you could do everything. So it's going to be a full day of fun.
Nice. And where can people sign up?
People can see your, that wasn't very nice. I was supposed to look at that, wasn't I?
You can just direct them to the Facebook page if that's easier. Whatever.
Yeah. It's the NEOCR Expo. Okay. That on Facebook, and there is the link and the event in there to put it on.
Nice.
Sorry about that.
And I know they've got a lot of good vendors. I know last year they were giving away like free race entries for a lot of the stuff. So
you know what? You're absolutely right, and they're doing that again this year. I apologize for not mentioning that because that's a big, pretty big deal. Spartan is giving away a Bari Math ticket to every person that walks through the door. So if you're a vendor, you're getting one. If you're doing DECA, you're getting one. If you're just coming to the expo, you're getting one. If you're just doing 100 meter, you're getting one. Everybody that walks through that door that day with a paid entry of whatever kind is getting a free race on that weekend. And I believe that's the last weekend in August.
There's like almost a reason. There's not a reason not to go at that point. No, you know,
you just,
like if you're an athlete who likes racing or even someone who wants to try OCR, right? You know, drag your colleagues, your spouse, your friends, et cetera, to the expo. You know, it seems like
100%. And even if you're already signed up for the expo, then signed up for the race itself, then get that ticket and give it to your buddy. You know, I mean, there's just absolutely no reason not to go. 100%.
Right. I mean, that's how we grow the sport, bringing new people in. We can grow the sport two ways. We keep people involved or we can bring new people in. Right. So, great opportunities for both at this expo. So, and I'm excited because as I mentioned earlier, I'll be East Coast next year. So, I'm sure I will be involved as a vendor or something. I'll be involved in something for the expo for next year. So
you will be, That's
keep it going. You need to keep it going
in September. Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Quick one to give a quick shout out to Mike Stefano from Obstacle Running Adventures. If anyone wants more podcast content, please head over to Obstacle Running Adventures. They're a staple brand there in the Northeast. And I know he'll be at the expo as well. And he's also the one who did this intro to allow us to do this podcast. So as we mentioned earlier, the importance of relationships, pays off again there.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, before we finally close things out, talk to me about Find Your Bold, your nonprofit.
So Find Your Bold is another thing that just kind of came up in the world of Boulder Dash. So when I first opened Boulder Dash, I did want it to be a nonprofit so that I could give back through what we were doing. However, I got really good advice from a few lawyers and they were like, nope, you need to establish yourself, establish your business, and then open up that nonprofit with it. So in 2015, we were able to work with lawyers and all those folks that help you set things up so that Boulder Dash and Find Your Bold can work together. And that's what we do to this day. So Find Your Bold does team building things and whatnot to get kids and adults outside, working together, communicating. Basically, we're helping people overcome what they perceive as personal obstacles. And we like to say we're turning obstacles into opportunities. And we do that through physical play or physical means. We also have a Find Your Bold team at most every Boulder Dash event. And what that means is we have elite athletes and what we like to call cheerleaders, for lack of a better way of saying it, is people who just want to see someone else succeed. And then we have our team members who are people from all walks of life, physical, mental disabilities, wounded veterans, some people who are just coming over an illness like cancer, or someone who just basically has never actually tried no CR before and just really wants to see what they can do out there. Those people are brought through the course with those mentors and team athletes, and they're shown throughout the course, okay, how best can we get you over this 6-foot wall? How best can we get you through whatever this rig is? And Boulder Dash builds its obstacles in levels. We've done that from the very first race we ever had. If you come up on an 8-foot wall, there's a side that has no assistance. There's a side that has a cleat towards the top, and there's a side that's a ladder all the way up and all the way down. And we do that everywhere we can with the different obstacles. And that Find Your Bold team is also something that can be, you can get help financially. If you're looking to come in on the team, we can help you financially to be able to run that with that group. And it's an awesome group. We've had teams as small as 2 all the way up to 80 plus. So it's awesome to see them out there. We have one lady that she is in a wheelchair. If what she's concentrating on is making her arms work, then her legs don't really get the message. Same thing when her legs are working, then her arms don't get the message. It takes anywhere between 4 and 6 people to get her through, but she does. She gets out of that wheelchair and she does every single obstacle every single time. Nina is awesome to watch go through that course.
Amazing. That's awesome. So cool to hear and so cool to learn about. For people who want to get more involved in that, do you guys have a separate social media page or is there a website? How do people get involved with that?
Yeah, Find Your Bold has its own Facebook and Instagram. We're not super active. We need to be a lot better at that. But we do have Facebook. We do have Instagram. And it's fybold.org is the website.
Great. Perfect. All right. All right, we're going to start closing things out on the podcast. Before we get going, we like to ask people, tell us something people would be surprised to know about you. So more random, the better. Let's see where you got, Lynn.
All right. So I hate this question because I tend to be kind of an open book, but I think what people probably don't know about me is Most people see that when there's a challenge out there or there's something to do, I just kind of go for it. What I think most people don't know about me is I'm absolutely petrified of everything. generally speaking, I cry before every event that we do because I'm convinced it's all going to go wrong. And I just, you know, I'm not ready for this. I can't do this anymore. If there's something exciting out there to do, like, you know, I've parasailed and I've done all those silly things every single time. If I'm up in the air and I'm looking down, I'm waiting for the sharks to eat me and I'm going to go down or I'm going to hit that mountain or whatever it may be. But I am definitely not the person that just jumps out and goes and does things. And then most people think that I am.
Oh, that's a good one. Good one. Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of, yeah, that fear is normal. And, you know, it's how you face that fear is kind of the important part of things. And, you know, I know like a lot of racers will get like pre-race anxiety and some of them are like really bad. And, you know, it's you just kind of push it to the side and get to the start line and, the power through it. If anyone's looking for on the racer side, if anyone's looking for tips on the like pre-race anxiety, my book on endurance talks a little bit about that and dives into that and some mental strategies and mental techniques for that. So available on my website, teamstrengthspeed.com. So any of our listeners, feel free to go check that out. All right, we're going to actually start wrapping things up. Any final shout outs you need to give, friends, family, sponsors, et cetera, anything we missed?
The most important thing for me is my family. They've been extremely supportive through all of this time. I have three kids and a wonderful husband, and shout out always to them.
Awesome. And for our listeners, again, head over to teamstrengthspeed.com if you're looking for obstacle course racing books or techniques. I've about 8 books on there at this point, covering some of that stuff, talking about brands, different obstacle race brands, and then my biography, Ultra OCR Men's, also on there with links to the audiobook. And then Blegmits, we are the U.S. distributor of Blegmits. So if anyone needs Blegmit Lights or Blegmit Extremes, you can head over to teamstrengthspeed.com, order them there. Discount if you buy the combo of the light and the extreme together. And then again, another final shout out to Obstacle Running Adventures. Appreciate him doing this link up and all the work he's doing out in the Northeast over there. I think that kind of wraps it up. Check the show notes down below. We're going to drop some other links for other discounts. I got a code for Mud Gear. I got a code for Manscaped. I'll drop all those links down below. I think they're both about 20% off, just like the Yolks one, all in the show notes down below. And we will see you in the next episode. Thanks for joining us, Lynn.
Thank you so much.